What's up, Breakthrough Success listeners? Mark Burry, the podcast and virtual summit launch coach here. And one of the things we have to think about is how are we branding ourselves? Because the branding that we have in place is going to impact how people view our products and services, how people view our free content, how people view us as a whole. So we're going to be utilizing power branding and talk about that in this episode so you can enhance your market position. The guest who joins us today, he is the founder of McKee Wallwork and Company, which is an award-winning advertising agency and marketing consultancy that specializes in generating new momentum for stalled, stuck, and stale organizations. The company that was started up by our guest has made it to the Inc. 500 list as one of the fastest-growing private companies in America. So our guest who joins us for this episode of Breakthrough Success is none other than Steve McKee. Steve, welcome to the show.
That's quite an introduction. Thanks.
Steve, thank you so much for taking the time to be on Breakthrough Success. Power branding, I know it's something you enjoy talking about, and it's going to be something that a lot of listeners benefit from. So can you briefly share with us, we all know branding's important, but someone like you can share like a deeper meaning behind that. So I'm wondering if you could just share that deeper meaning.
That's a great question because we do all know branding. We don't know how important it is. So first things first, terminology, right? So some people, when you say brand, you know, they think it's like a logo or something or a color scheme. But the way we define branding is it's the sum and substance of everything that you do. It's your reputation. It's what it all adds up to. And here's a little known insight about branding that people don't really realize is of all the assets you or your company owns, your brand is fundamentally different. Because every other asset you own will depreciate over time. You know, so like if you own a building, the roof's going to leak, trucks break down, intellectual property expires, valuable employees leave. But your brand can continually appreciate forever. That's quite a thought. So when you launch a new brand on day one, it's worth nothing, right? Because it's nobody knows about it. The second day, it's worth something. The third day, it's worth something more. And you go on and on time. And before long, you get it to be in the higher levels with Apple and Google and Coca-Cola. Their brands are worth hundreds of billions of dollars. And so we tend to think of branding as sort of an add-on or a frivolous thing when it's actually, at its root, it's actually the core of everything that we do. That's our belief here. And when you think about it that way, it causes you to make different decisions.
Yeah, and I love your deeper analysis. To me, branding was just like, you know, like everything that you do, but I love the deeper analysis. Like branding, that's the only thing that can appreciate over time because you've got like properties and stuff that they could appreciate because they're in a location, but like water leaks and different things like that, that Steve mentioned. And one of the things that I do want to hit on is you could be in like the same business and have completely different brands. So like think about your fancy restaurant and then think of your McDonald's. Like both of them are successful, but they're successful for different reasons because their brands mean different things. So how do we figure out what exactly we should be amplifying for our brand?
That's the $64,000 question. We look at the intersections of three circles. If you think of a Venn diagram, first thing you have to understand is the market. You know, what market are you in? Where's it going? What are the specific dynamics about it? What are your opportunities in that market? Second thing you need to look at is customers. We have a saying here, the narrower your target, the greater the intensity of the appeal. And your customer universe should be as broad as necessary to achieve your business goals, but as narrow as possible. You want to understand them in a great deal of depth. One of the mistakes we make is thinking of customers in terms of demographics, but people are so much more than that. And we can come back to that if you want. And then the third thing, that third circle in the Venn diagram, is your unique capacity and capabilities. You know, what you are able to be world-class industry leading at. I would love to be an NFL star. Not going to happen. I gave that up when I was five, I think, because I just don't have the capacity to do it. And so a great case example is a lot of companies think that they're going to be like the best price, the low price leader. Well, if you're not set up like Walmart, I mean, like to legitimately have a fundamental advantage in driving prices down, you can't occupy that space. So, you know, other companies will say, well, we're the finest quality. Well, you know, just because you want it to be so doesn't mean that it's true. But there's a host of ways to position yourself, really unlimited. And it all depends on what market you're trying to appeal to, what customer demo you're trying to appeal to based on the dynamics of your market. So those three interlocking circles are all full of variables. And the art of branding is figuring out where they intersect for you.
And I do like that that whole analysis. I do want to dig deeper into the customer standpoint, though, because I can say, oh, Breakthrough Success is the best business podcast. But, you know, to who? Like, just because I think my podcast is the best because I've got big bias, that doesn't necessarily mean everyone's going to think it's the best because, you know, some people like a different style of podcast. Right. So how do we get a better idea of who our ideal customer is, like who our ideal audience is? So better serve that group.
Well, one thought on, before I answer that, one thought on, because you mentioned the best, we have another guiding principle here is don't be better, be different. But if you try and think in terms of best, you kind of get into grooves that are already well worn in the marketplace. But if you think about how can we be different, it's one step before being best. If you're truly different, one of the power branding principles I have in the book is there's no competition in a category of one. Meaning if you're the only fill in the blank, that puts you in rare space. Now, you have to be relevant to an audience, and that was your question. How do you figure that out? Human beings are very complex individuals, and we are so much more than our age and our income and our occupation and our geography and our gender. We are a whole host of attitudes and emotions and lifestyles and wants and needs. And honestly, the best way to uncover who your customer should be is by trying to identify whose bell you're already ringing and figure out why. So this podcast, for example, if you wanted to figure out who your core customer was, well, you'd want to identify your heaviest listeners somehow, and then you want to understand them. And on the surface, they might look very different. You know, you might have an old guy like me in the southwestern United States. You might have a young millennial gal in Canada. On the surface, we look very different. But almost by definition, if we both like your podcast, if you're ringing both of our bells, we have something in common. Find out what that something is, then you double down on that. You triple down on it, and you win. That's the art.
Yeah, and I love how earlier you mentioned that, you know, demographics, they don't tell a clear enough story. And like just right there, your example, I mean, there are people who are like super young who listen to the show. There are people who are older people who are like, there are different reasons people come back on the show time and time again. A lot of people are inspired by my age. So that's one of the reasons people do keep coming back to my stuff and being able to figure out your key thing, the reason why the bells are ringing. That will certainly help you, as Steve mentions. And I feel like part of business is always expansion. Like for instance, I'm launching a new podcast. This time it's actually already been launched, but Ditch the Job, as we're recording, not launched yet, definitely launched by the time this is up. But the risk with expansion is that sometimes you risk losing your identity. So yes. How can we continue to expand? Because as a business, I feel like if you're not growing, you're dying. So how can you continue to expand but stay true to your core branding of who you are?
Yeah, that's a common mistake a lot of companies make is they start chasing different customers in that endless effort to expand. If you find out who your core customer is, there are always more of them out there. Unless you're spending $100 million a year on advertising, you haven't found them all. So you're better off looking for more of those same people than trying to dilute your brand by looking for others. You know, you could take the automakers as a great idea because there are so many auto brands and they've been at it for 100 years. They spend a bunch of money. BMW is not going to go after, you know, the Ford driver. And Ford has no business chasing the BMW driver. They know who their customer audience is. And even within, take the luxury car makes, you got BMW, Lexus, Infiniti, Volvo, and other ones. They have nuanced targeted customer bases for nuanced positionings. And they're really smart enough not to get diluted. Sometimes they make mistakes. Cadillac offered a $30,000 Cadillac at one point. Big mistake. Trying to go down market and get their volume up, but it ended up ruining the cachet of the brand. But generally speaking, you want to double down, triple down on your core customer. That's why it's so important to figure out who they are.
Yeah, really great point, because sometimes people do overexpand and they lose touch. Like, there's a book, Brick by Brick, that shows how Lego, they lost touch where they just tried to create things for everybody and they almost went bankrupt. The most famous branding example has to be New Coke, though, where they tried to brand it a little bit differently and that crushed their brand. So
that's actually a great case study of misunderstanding your customer. You know, that was one of the most researched new product launches of all time. And all of the research said it's a go. What they weren't able to research, and this is where it broke down, is when they said to somebody, here, taste this, you know, do you like it? Yeah, I like it and all that. But what they didn't tell anybody, because they didn't think to, is, by the way, we're going to take away your old Coke. And that's part of our identity, right? Coke. And that's what people say. It really wasn't about the taste of the soft drink. It was about the whole concept of how can Coke, the real thing, the original, change? And it threw people for a loop.
I mean, I knew that's the most famous case study. I've heard it a few times. But I didn't know that they did all this research to pretty much say that, you know, like, this thing's a go. I didn't know about that part. I just knew that, you know, they just played around with the Coke, New Coke, and it messed up. But
yeah, and you mentioned the Lego story, too. There was another case of, you know, when the computer games started coming out and online gaming, and they started chasing that because they thought that's – they failed to appreciate that what their brand is about is building. It's not so much the blocks, but it's also not video. It's about creating and building. And through that pain that they went through, they discovered that. So business is a contact sport. You know, it's easy as a Monday morning quarterback to talk about New Coke or Lego or these things that brands struggle with. It's really difficult when you're in charge of a brand to never make a mistake like that, because you just can't, you don't know what you don't know.
Yep. That's definitely a good point. And I think to get like a better understanding for anyone's perspective is to get have more conversations with people who fit that ideal customer avatar. And the more conversations you get with those people, the easier it is for you to avoid making the types of mistake like New Coke and things like that. Not to say they're impossible to make, but you know, it makes it more difficult to make those mistakes if you are in front of your core more often. So for someone who has their brand down, they know what they're all about, they know who their ideal customer is, how do we find more of those types of people?
Well, you hunt. That's like, how do you find more gorillas in the forest, right? You follow the gorillas. You gotta understand your customer really well. In this day and age of social media and online influencers, you know, the whole buying influence thing is just not a good trend, and it's not going to be a lasting trend when you're paying an influencer to talk about you. But when you identify your genuine fans who genuinely have influence, anything you can do to augment that, pour a little gasoline on it in an authentic way, that's what you want to do. It's a slower build, but it's more real, it's more authentic, and it's going to be lasting. You can't chase, and you can pay somebody $10,000 to post something on Instagram. So what? You know, you might have a flare up, but that's not the way to build a brand. Brands are built brick by brick.
And I mean, that's a really great point where you're building deeper relationships with people who have, like, I love the gorilla analogy where, like, that you want to find gorillas in the forest, you follow the gorilla, because the people who fit your ideal audience, they say, Jim Rohn says that you're the average of the five people you spend most of your time with. And usually that quote is one of those, like, you know, be careful who you surround yourself with, make sure you're surrounding yourself with people who up level you. But you have to look at your ideal customer and think they are the average of the five people they spend most of their time with. So they are probably spending time with other people who fit that ideal customer trend. So that's a really great point about the gorilla analogy, and just to focus more on ideal customers, and just like, some influencer has this amount of followers, let's get this guy to do something for me.
That's why you see, you know, when you have like a local restaurant that's very successful and the proprietor is on the floor every night taking care of people, he really knows his customers. And when he starts franchising, that's when things start to break away, because the store managers aren't as involved as the proprietor is. And, you know, if you think about every restaurant, think about every tacky restaurant chain in America. I won't name any names, but think about them, you know, the ones that dot every corner. At one point, that was a single store restaurant. and it was awesome. That's why somebody franchised it. But when you franchise something, it gets diluted over time. And that's true about growth in general. We have to be really, really careful and continually return to our roots. You know, Walmart, the most successful retailer in the world, has regularly lost its way because they lose sight of their core customer, which is people who live paycheck to paycheck. Occasionally Walmart gets thrown off by Target because Target's cooler. And so even internally, they're like, we want to be more like Target. And then they start paying attention to their margins and to what they're saying, and they lose their way. But they found their way back time after time. And I have a lot of respect for the company, but even a company that successful can lose its way.
Yeah, and that's a really great point, especially when you're a big company, it is easier to get diluted. Like if you're, you know, like the founder, like someone listening to Breakthrough Success, you email me, you're like, well, I listened to your show. Like, wow, that means a lot to me. I'm going to reply to you. But like, let's say Breakthrough Success was this like gigantic podcasting network and you've got like 20 different hosts. And then you got like, you know, like you reach out to one of the hosts, like maybe they don't respond because they got a whole different few different things going on. Like Breakthrough Success is just like their side hustle. So that's a really great point to get. Like with that expansion, you have to be careful about the over dilution as well.
Yeah. And that's why if you're serving the right core customer base and you double and triple down on it, you have greater odds of staying successful with it.
And one thing I do want to talk about, I feel like we've hit on this theme a little bit earlier in the interview, but to slightly frame it a little differently, when it comes to focusing on that core audience, there are a lot of distractions out there. Like you hear about like a new social network coming out, which could be great for some people. And you see some people getting massive results. And then you think because these people get massive results, you can jump on that social platform and get the results too. But that takes you away from your core customer. So how do you suggest that we stay focused on the people who matter the most without getting distracted by shiny objects?
Yes, another power branding principle is beware a tactic in search of a strategy. Meaning it's easy to get distracted and you don't want to do that because you're just chasing business. We've done a lot of research over the years in terms of how companies grow and how they fail. And one of the key questions that we've asked time and time again, and the pattern continually reveals itself, is when companies are more opportunistic than strategic. If you would describe your company as more opportunistic than strategic, you're more likely going to run into rough waters. You have to have the discipline to identify your strategy and stay with it. One of the reasons companies do tactic around, if I could call it that, is because they haven't done the heavy lifting of figuring out who their customers are and what their brand's about. And so they're kind of guessing and they're casting about, you know, looking one way or another. There was a famous Oprah episode where Oprah gave a Pontiac to every member of the audience. I don't know if you remember that. She actually said to everybody in the audience, you're going to get a new Pontiac, which is like a pretty big deal. It made the news. It was huge. It was stupid because it was Pontiac's desperate attempt to achieve relevance. It's a dying brand trying to achieve relevance by going on the number one, you know, TV show in America, giving cars to a bunch of people in the audience who were not Pontiac customers. They got a nice news blip out of it, did nothing for the brand. It was just a tactic.
Was that the one where, like, I see, like, you get a car, you get a car.
Yeah. And if you're in the audience that day, that's a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah, that's a sweet deal.
But beyond that, does it do anything for brand Pontiac? Nope.
Good point.
Did something for brand Oprah? Yes.
Oh, yeah. Big time.
Yeah.
That makes me think of, like, the Esurance commercial, the $1.5 million Super Bowl giveaway. I mean, like, I remember that being, like, really hot when it first came out, but I don't remember if it did anything for Esurance.
Well, you know, the Esurance and a lot of those brands that advertise in the Super Bowl, if they're smart, they use the stunt strategically as part of a long-term brand identity building program, as opposed to a one-off, you know, we're going to hit it out of the park, blow $5 million on the Super Bowl. That's a mistake. But there have been some really smart ones. So like E-Trade over the years, speaking of E, has been very, very smart. It's found different ways to communicate its positioning. I think of one Super Bowl ad where they had a monkey on a trash can dancing or something. It was really stupid. And 25 seconds into the commercial, they said, well, we just wasted $3 million. What are you doing with your money? And for them, that worked because it was all about wasting your money. For another kind of client, that wouldn't. And they continued to do good work. Think of Geico, you know, which just spends so much money. And some of their stuff hits better than others, but they've redefined the whole category. All the insurers now are trying to do humor. So it's okay to swing and miss as long as you're not at bat one time and swinging for the fences. You know, it's all about your batting average. And so you got to recognize if you're an all-star, if I can continue the metaphor,
go for it.
You're going to go to the Hall of Fame based on your batting average, not based on how far you hit a ball.
Yeah.
And so it's really about recognizing the pitcher you're facing, recognizing the conditions you're in, going for singles and doubles and triples and trying to get on base. It's really about playing the game. That's what effective branding is, instead of swinging for the fences. And you're just going to strike out.
Yeah, I definitely love the baseball metaphor. Baseball, gorillas, we got a lot of good metaphors in this episode.
We do. We need
one. One of the things that I do want to hit on, though, is I love the tactic versus strategy argument and how strategy – is the foundation, how tactic kind of like gives you the shiny object. So how do we come up with a strategy that is going to help us grow over time?
Yeah, we have a 4-step process and it's inviolable. If you do this right, every time you'll be successful. There's 4 steps. First, you got to articulate what it is you're trying to accomplish. And I know that sounds like you can skip that step, but you can't. Because most of the time when we work with clients, what they think they're trying to accomplish is not what they're trying to accomplish. And we work them through a series of exercises to help them figure out, what is it? Singular objective, not multiple, singular objective. What are you trying to accomplish? Second, who's going to get you there? And that's where you get into your target customer base. It has to be big enough to achieve your objectives, your objective, but small enough or narrowly defined enough to be unique. Third is what's going to ring their bell. We talked about that from a positioning standpoint. And then fourth is what's the strategy to go and do it. If you do it in that order, you're going to do pretty well. So my first book, When Growth Stalls, presents that formula of what's our objective, who's our target, what's our identity, and then what's our strategy. Most companies start or try to start on step 3 or 4. Starting on step 4 is when you say, should we do social media advertising or buy a Super Bowl ad? They ask me that question. I don't know. I mean, you know, who would know the answer to that? But a lot of our angst in businesses, we're rolling around on step 4 trying to figure out the answer. I say, no, you got to go to step 3, which is, well, what are we trying to be? You know, who are we? Some companies are staring at their navel about that question. In order to answer that question, you got to go to step 2. Well, whose needs are we trying to meet? And that question is driven by, well, why are we even here? You know, why are we in business? So you start at what we call the top of the staircase. What's our objective? Who's going to get us there? Who's our target audience? What's going to ring their bell from an idea standpoint? And then how do we go about doing it? If you follow those 4 steps, you'll have some measure of success. The better you follow them and the more capabilities you have at each step, the more successful you'll be. And that's frankly how we turn companies from stalled to growing. We just help them revisit those core principles, walk through it with them, and generate new momentum. It's really a pretty straightforward proposition. It's just hard to do.
Steve, that is a really awesome breakdown. I mean, I see how that makes sense. I mean, a lot of people, like, it is, do I do social media marketing or do I do the Super Bowl? And then it's like, what's your objective? What are you after? And if you follow that 4-step process that Steve's just highlighted, you're going to have a lot more clarity. If you want even more clarity, get Steve's books. They will be in the show notes for anyone who's interested. In addition to your books, where are some other places we could follow you and learn more about your work?
Well, you could go to whengrowthstalls.com, which will get you to our company website. It's also mckeewallwork.com. We publish a great deal. In fact, there's an insights section of our website that you can't get to the bottom to, or the bottom of. There is so many articles and tips there. Again, it's mckeewallwork.com or whengrowthstalls.com. You can also learn about the books we have there. And that's just sort of the hub of everything we do. So I would encourage anybody who's interested to check us out, visit us, drop me a line. Love to chat with people, just to shoot the breeze like this even.
Well, Steve, we'll include all those links in the show notes. Once again, thank you so much for taking the time to be on Breakthrough Success. It was such a pleasure having you on the show.
Thanks, Mark.